W1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. Georgia high school shooting. I'm Michelle Franzen. Authorities in Winder will provide an update on today's shooting at Appalachie High School. Multiple law enforcement officials tell ABC News four people are dead, nine others injured after a gunman opened fire this morning, and say the suspect is a 14-year-old student. Shirley, a senior, says the normal day quickly turned to panic.
I heard some gunshots, and it appeared to be like, they were like...
16-year-old Layla says when the lockdown light went on in her class, her classmates huddled.
My classmates and I actually barricaded our door. We stacked desks and chairs to try and just help, and we were all just scared at this moment, and my teacher, she was also scared as well.
Vice President Kamala Harris denouncing the gun violence and called for reasonable gun safety laws. Former President Trump at a post blaming what he called a sick and deranged monster for the shooting and offered condolences. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The mayor of Waukesha is condemning a campaign ad that tries to link Senator Tammy Baldwin with the deaths of six people at the Waukesha Christmas Parade in 2021. Daryl Brooks Jr. was free on $1,000 bail at the time. Sean Riley says the claims in the ad are false and that they hurt the entire community. About 50,000 older people in Wisconsin can expect big savings on their prescriptions next year. Starting January 1st, out-of-pocket drug costs will be capped at $2,000 a year for people on Medicare Part D.
We have older Wisconsinites that are choosing either limiting their supply of their prescriptions, or they literally are taking resources that are used to pay for other essentials.
David Bowen is with AARP Wisconsin. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers, game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel? White-tailed deer? Black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Well, as we come out of Labor Day, had to wear a Labor shirt. Thank you to the UAW member I met at the convention who said, hey, I got to have you wear one of these UAW shirts on the show. He was gracious enough to give me one, so I am wearing it. Any of my union listeners out there, viewers out there, want to see their union on screen, by all means, you can send me a t-shirt as well. A little. Shameless plug for more union drip, as they say. But hey, some good news today. Donald Trump has lost his mind completely. And look, we've been saying this for a while. Trump, you know, our media is so bad at reporting what Donald... Maybe it's that they've gotten used to it as well. Maybe it's that they're just immune. They see so much crazy that there's so much to pick from. That it's so outrageous, the stuff that Donald Trump says, that they just go, oh, it's Wednesday. You know, that's all I can think of. All I can think of is it's so outlandish, the things he comes out with. You know, the sharks and the electrocution and bacon prices up a gazillion times, and I'm going to bring it all down tomorrow. You know, all this crazy, no one's ever seen. That's like his favorite. Yeah, people have seen that inflation before. They have. And we fought through it. This idea that no one's ever seen. Well, you know what no one's ever seen, Donald? Your comment to the Moms of Liberty group. And look, understand, I believe Donald Trump knows his audience, better than anyone. Knows when you're talking to crazy people, you gotta say crazy stuff. So when I heard this clip, and I played it a couple of times just to make sure I wasn't not hearing it properly, my mind went to this, why would you say something this stupid? And then again, it's read the room. He's in a room full of crazy people who take, you know, just, you know, a seedling of reality and blow it up into, you know, just the craziest, most wild conspiracies you'll ever find. So he, on the transgender issue, he was talking and he said, and I quote this because I think it's important to understand what exactly he said. He said, the transgender thing is incredible. He says, think of it. Your kid goes to school and he comes home a few days later with an operation. The school decides what's going to happen with your child. And I'm going, did I hear that right? They come home a few days later with an operation? Did you not care where they were for the last couple of days? And where are they doing these operations? Is it done in the cafeteria? I mean, you know, they do have the dishwasher there could, you know, heat up the knives, you know, to a sufficient level to be somewhat sterile. Is this going to be a biology experiment? Is this, you know, the kids going, hey, you know, we got, you know, this person over here, you know, they want to have some surgery. So let's, instead of dissecting a fetal pig, we're now going to be, you know, doing sex changes in school. Is this where this goes? Is this health class? Is this how we find, is this how, yeah, I shouldn't even say it. I should not even say it because I know someone out there will go, yeah, you, they want to have in health class. They want to have, you know, men turned into women. And that's how men learn about little girls. This is crazy, crazy. And yet I've not seen it on the front page or the lead of every news story. And it should be, because this is lunacy. But am I surprised by it? No. Because this is a guy who's around every issue, on every side, at every moment, and truth and reality and facts. We literally came up with a term for the stuff that Donald Trump says. When I was a kid, it was called lies. It was called bull, you know what? Alternative facts. Alternative reality. No, lies. Bull. For instance, perfect for instance, he's been trying to distance himself from Project 2025. He didn't write it, he says. He doesn't know anything about it. Didn't read it. Doesn't know anything about it. Nothing. Pure as the driven snow. Pure heart. Pure of mind. Has seen nothing. Yet... he praised the Project 2025 as having proposals that everybody would like. He said there's something in there for everybody, fun for the whole family, something everyone would like. And you go no. And if you didn't read it, and again this is that. Did we bother to ask the next question? Did you read it? If he didn't read it, how does he know? Doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. Reality doesn't matter. Truth doesn't matter. You know, Trump's emails got hacked from the Trump campaign. Evidently, a bunch of emails got hacked. And I know Trump doesn't have email because he's smart enough not to write anything down. Because once you write it down, once you put it on paper, once your name's assigned to it, you're kind of a little bit stuck to it. You know, if you say it to this crowd or that crowd or another crowd, yeah, well, I misspoke, or he doesn't even do that. But there are emails out there that I haven't seen. Now, I do remember the Hillary campaign. I do remember the, hey, Russia, if you're listening, send us those Hillary emails. I do remember our mainstream media talking about emails all the time. But her emails was a thing. But her emails, was a response I would get to people when saying how bad Donald Trump was. Yeah, but her emails. Why? And I'll tell you why. Why we haven't seen anything from the Trump campaign's emails is they can't be any crazier than what comes out of his mouth. And if we're not reporting on what comes out of his mouth, why would anybody report on what his campaign is writing? Because the stuff that spews out of his pie hole is pure lunacy. This idea that your kid's going to go to school, a couple days later, they're going to come home as, someone you don't recognize, is really twisted. So you conflate this idea that schools are trying to be more accepting of people with different viewpoints. And it's now drive-through surgeries? And eventually, I do believe someone's going to say, no, it's what they're doing in health class now. You know, they're letting the students do it now. Because, you know, why not? Do you think it gets better? Or do you think he just goes crazier down the proverbial rabbit hole? Do you think the what's up here gets any better? Especially if he becomes president? Do you think, are you ready for four more years of what was absolute, total lunacy? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Want to hear it back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Monday, Labor Day, all eyes, as if every Labor Day, all eyes on Pittsburgh, because they seem to have the biggest Labor Day parade celebration in the country. Everyone I know seems to converge on Pittsburgh. And I got to tell you, a kid growing up in Cleveland, I don't know, not happy about it. But I love the fact that here in Pennsylvania, we are known for our Labor Day parades. The president and the vice president made their way, had some incredible things to say. That's why I've reached out to my friend Darren Kelly. He's the president of the Allegheny Fayette Central Labor Council out there, a former firefighter head. Darren, thanks for taking time for us.
Always, anytime. It's great to be on with your listeners, and what a great, memorable day. I can't wait to tell you some great stories.
No, I watched the speeches. I got to see a lot of the event, and it like always, just incredible presentation and incredible foot in the right direction for the city. But let's talk about the president. The president gave what I thought was his stump speech about how strong his administration has been for labor, how strong the country moves when labor is strong. It was a great stump speech, but then turned it off.
You know, it was one of those things, and, you know, the parade, as one of our biggest in history, you should have seen it. People were lining in the streets. Everybody was cheering. The weather was perfect. And naturally, that gets the great coverage. And then we know the dual event with hopefully our future president and our current president. But there was one thing that I really wish you had a chance to see was up leading to it. You know, it was a jam-packed event. And I took some time and I stuck on the media riser to look around a little bit. And it was so crowded, the host and everybody there to make it comfortable were breaking down tables in the middle of everything, carrying them up over top each other to make sure that everybody had a chance to see this memorable event. And I remember taking a pause and remember, this goes back to our roots. The music was blasting. Everybody had ice cream and sandwiches, and they were more worried about making sure everybody had a chance to be part of that. That's what I'm so proud about, is how our city came in and gave us a moment of pause to remember, you know, we had some tough times ahead, but we're going to do this together as a family. Every union was there, every person was there. And prior to the speech, you know, we had a chance to, I had sat down and talked to the vice president and the president a little bit. And she was going around and talking to families. And you and I have been in this business for a long time. We know when elected officials are there just for the camera. What I seen out of this amazing woman, it was my first time, I watched her spend the 5 minutes with a child to talk about their school. Wasn't worried about where the cameras were, her angles were, her position. She genuinely cared. That right there is, I can't wait to see a woman like that lead this country. And I wish you had a chance to see it when the cameras are off and nobody was around, to see how she engaged with mostly just what we would consider everyday people. So, and then to watch, you know, watch President Biden, the most pro-union president in history, and what he's done for our movement, to handle himself once again with such class, and to make sure that everybody knew that stage was hers. And I was so proud to be there with all the international presidents, and it was a memorable historical day. But we know that that comes with lofty expectations for our region, that we are more than ready to carry this, you know, carry this momentum over top, my friend.
Now, the comment kept coming up, you know, when unions are strong, the country's strong. When unions do better, the country does better. When union workers do better, all workers do better. This frame constantly, you know, something we've been saying on this program all 19 years of doing this, it is great to see finally politicians not choking that out, but actually saying it and believing it.
It's not just the cliche, right? It's something that the numbers are showing it. A healthy workforce is a happy workforce. A happy workforce works better for you, right? We always talked about it. It's not brain science here. It's true economics, the true root of economics. And yesterday was one for the record books, but it's the momentum of Western Pennsylvania. We're very excited. We know this race comes through here, and we're ready to make that happen. That's for sure. And, you know, you take a look at it, you had Governor Walz, he's going around. You have the team of Biden and Harris doing their different things. International presence, Donald Trump chose the Gulf. And I hope the country recognized that. And that's the kind of slap in the face that every one of us needs every once in a while. So there's your everyday man. When people are standing with you and are actually running on things that they actually did, the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of jobs for union members around this country, and actually are doing it, and someone who said they were going to do it did nothing but actually chose to golf and spend time at his $10 million resort. That's about as off the pitch of a working class person as I can think of, my friend.
Well, to be honest, he did. To be fair, he did put out a tweet and a social and a Truth Social post. There was that.
Oh, okay, so he actually was working. My bad.
No, I don't actually know that.
You're
to be fair,
keeping me honest, brother.
Equally, to be fair, I don't know that it was him who did it, because it wasn't on all caps. So had it been in all caps, I'd have been 100% on. But you never know. But the reason I bring this up is, you know, there's a record here. Yes. And this is where I keep talking to my union brothers and sisters and go, look, you can wear your red hat, you can fly your Trump flag, and, you know, and that's going to say a lot about you. But on the union front, there's no comparison. There's no way you can look at the two administrations, the Trump administration and the Biden-Harris administration, and say that there's anything similar, anything whatsoever.
There is absolutely zero. Like I was interviewed a bunch of times yesterday, as you can imagine. And we did have some conservative groups that did grab me up and want some interviews, which I was excited to do. It's okay. Sure. You really want to play? That's absolutely. Give me one instance. I said, I'm not asking you to give me 100. I'm not asking you to give me 5. I'm asking you to give me one instance in Western Pennsylvania that you can say that one of Donald Trump's policies, one, has benefited the working class families of Western Pennsylvania. You can't. You cannot do it because you know he didn't do it. I could name you 5,000 that heard it. So if you want to get the tape ready, let's have a ball. Then they usually leave me alone after that. But it really does come down to, you know, what things he's pushed and the policies he stood by, and there is no comparison.
And it comes down to the very best people. If you remember when Trump ran, he said he was going to surround himself with the very best people. Well, the very best people aren't endorsing him, many of them. And the ones that are were the, to be honest, for working people, the very worst people. So do we want, you know, a repeat of that? We saw how bad the first part was. Do we really want a sequel? Especially given the fact that, and I'm sure you've seen Project 2025, I'm sure Absolutely. You've read the labor sections in just how bad that would be. So as, you know, head of the labor council there in the Pittsburgh area, you know, how bad would that be? When you're talking to people on the street, how bad would the implementation of Project 2025 be for your members in your community?
It would be horrible. And one of the first things we did was make hard copies and digital copies, sent it to every leader in Western Pennsylvania. We asked it to be distributed to everyone. If you want to do it on paper, we'll give you the paper. It's that much of a horrible document. It is a complete elimination of the Department of Education. We know what it does to programs up and down. It pretty much to me is a, how do you want to say it for without trying to be polite?
A repeal of the 20th century?
It is the game plan for putting the working class back under the foot of those that we fought for hundreds of years to get away from. And to say that he is wrong, oh, I had nothing to do with that. That's it's laughable. Actually, his own people aren't even believing that. It is an absolute death nail to those that just wake up every day to thrive, to have a better life each day and want their family just to have the same piece of the American dream that everybody else has. And this is a true testament of who he really is. The people he puts behind him they play for keeps. They mean what they say, and they will destroy anything and everything that the working class has built in this country.
I think Tim Walz is right. You know, as a football coach and as someone who coached a little bit myself, you don't draw up a play, you don't draw up a playbook, you don't draw something up without having the intent to actually use it. So the fact that they've put 922 pages of bad ideas into one document, you better believe there's some intent there.
And if, like they said, well, he had nothing to do with it. The people he literally has had the relationships that sat in cabinet positions that are his kitchen cabinet. That's his words, not ours. To draw this up and to say, you know what? Nah, no way. That is, we would expect some honesty. You write something, own it.
Yeah.
And let's see where it goes from there. And we see what this is. But that is without a doubt a death nail to not just the unions, but the middle class itself.
I want to go back to the parade because, you know, I'm watching videos and I'm talking to some friends who are there, and just the atmosphere, this kind of idea of, you know, across union, across craft, across gender, across orientation, across of every sector, every division line, every way to slice, dice, pit people together against each other. They were there in that one moment. And I think that's a pretty cool statement.
It was, you know, it was funny. That's why we love our parade so much, is it has everything, and it has big numbers of everything. You know, it's nothing better than to see the member of the building trades right next to the steel workers right next to AFSCME and IATSE and going all the way down. And they're so proud to wear their Kellers. But when you go up inside, and I have some drone film, I got to send some things to you that we had someone filming for us. As they go up and they're at their picnics before, they're all intermingled. Okay. And so it looks like one big giant rainbow. A kid of an SEIU member is over at the Carpenters getting his face painted. A member of the teachers union is over playing cornhole with the painters. They had all the bands, and these are the days that we need to get everyone back to their roots, to remember that we are in the business of people no matter what we have, social media, no matter what we have to have our attorneys and everything. We have that purpose, brother. You know that more than anybody, but we're in the business of people. And when we lose that sense, we lose our identity, we lose our identity, we lose our heartbeat, and we don't survive.
So when I saw this, and the reason I bring it up is this idea of every generation rediscovering solidarity and what it looks like. To me, that's what it looked like. This idea of people coming together, especially now, you know, as this, you know, kind of officially, you know, I don't like Labor Day being officially the end of summer and officially the beginning of the kickoff for election season, but it's kind of turned into that. So to have this incredible event, and this incredible cross-section of people, this rediscovering of solidarity and willingness to fight and move, I think it's a great thing heading towards that November day.
Absolutely, because we all know that just like any army, you look around, there's your soldiers and your warriors are from all classes, all colors, all religions, but you have one unified message, and this time it's survival. We know what's at stake. We know that we only have each other. And like you and I talked about, as a firefighter, when the smoke's around me and, you know, the heat's there, I don't know who that is. All I can do is hear their voice. I don't see what they look like. I don't know anything else about them, and I know they have the heart to be right there with us. And does it really matter who they are? They have the same thing in common. And that's what I seen yesterday. And that's the power that we're going to have going forward.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because, you know, clearly, you know, labor as a whole, except for my union, the Teamsters, is behind, you know, the Harris-Walz ticket. The conversation that's being pushed on the right, I think mostly because of my union, is that unions have some splits. They're trying to create a division. So where I want to finish up with is in looking at this moment and looking again at the records, we saw what Donald Trump did. We saw Donald Trump's general counsel of the NLRB being a guy who was instrumental in firing the Patco workers back in 81. We see Joe Biden's general counsel, someone who's just been incredible. As you're going out and you're talking to people, as Labor 2024 ramps up and we start knocking on those doors of maybe some Republican or, you know, Republican-leaning union members, what's the pitch to them?
Well, first and foremost is that it's our brother or sister's choice of what they want to make. It's our job as union leaders to give them information, let them know all elected officials up and down a ticket where they stand on workers' issues, and give them the tools they need to make the proper educated decision. Now, there's going to be an occasion where people have their reasons for doing what they're doing. We're in the business of the majority, and I am very big. There'll be no, you know, we do not strong arm, we educate. And when you educate, you take time, and you'd be surprised kind of the results we have. That's why I think we're seeing the numbers surge like they are for Vice President Harris, is that we have a different approach. There's no strong, they strong them on the other side. That's what they do. They use fear. We use education. We use tactics that make our people empowered by knowledge. And that's a strategy that we've developed here in Western Pennsylvania. We're going to keep doing that. We're not going to swing everybody's votes, but we're going to swing the majority of them. And a majority of them. And that's the way we feel, is that the educational decision will win every time.
Yeah, it goes back to the early days of my being a member, having, you know, the older guys saying, look, you vote your job. You vote what's going to make sure that you can put food on the table, keep a roof over your head, put clothes on your kids' back, give you some health and retirement security. That's where your vote should go. And if that's the case, there is no choice, especially given the fact that, and I'm sure you saw or heard the interview with Elon Musk and Donald Trump. That's got to be something maybe you just bring on a tape recorder and go, here, listen.
That got a lot of people, some reactions. And we're on the doors on our educational end, you know, talking to everybody. That seemed to really upset a lot of people, justifiably. I wish it didn't get to all that. But to answer one of the questions we had talked about, you know, as our newer, younger brothers and sisters are coming up, my friend, you know, we taught the younger generation through being raised to ask questions, right? We told them to be strong, to be independent-minded, use your own brain. And now it's our duty to educate them. We can't just assume. I'm not saying, believe me, there's a purpose on both sides, right? But each generation, we teach them to be stronger and stronger and stronger. We want questions asked. We want leadership questions. We want people to stand up strong and say, okay, tell me why I should support so-and-so. And we can't be the point that people used to slam their hand down and say, but that's the way it needs to be. Okay, maybe so, but they're not, you know, my opinion is they're not less of members, right? Because they may say, hey, well, help me out. I have some questions about this. That's what we're in business for, people. That's in the business of taking time and remember that this labor movement is built from the bottom up, not the top down.
There you go. Darren Kelly, I appreciate the time. Great work. Congratulations on an incredible event. I'm sure you'll pull off something probably not as big as next year, because the president and the vice president, who may soon be president, I don't know. That's a pretty big get. But Darren, appreciate the time.
Thank you, my friend. It's always a pleasure. Great to see you.
Darren Kelly, president of the Allegheny Fayette Central Labor Council. Want to hear your thoughts. What'd you do on the big Labor Day? I guarantee you didn't have the president and the vice president show up to your parade. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
This is the talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by...
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A mostly clear sky this evening, increasing clouds overnight. Lows mid-50s. Sun and cloud mix for tomorrow with a couple of storms around. High upper 70s. Cooler for the rest of the week and weekend. Highs in the mid-60s Friday and Saturday. Low 70s Sunday. Currently at 68.
Do you have a home you'd like to rent out but don't know where to start? Consider Simple Life Rentals, a property management company partnered with booking sites like Airbnb and Expedia, amplifying your home's exposure to the marketplace. Simple Life Rentals screens guests and creates an owner portal with analytics, rental agreements, and legal guidelines. We give you complete visibility into how your manager's doing, ensuring your property is well-maintained and maximizing your return on investment. Get peace of mind. SimpleLifeRentals.com.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So again, I look at this frame, you know, the which side are you on frame as we come out of Labor Day. And, you know, as we were talking about with Darren Kelly there a minute ago, we're in a moment where both sides are not equal. There's some very big differences. There's a massive gulf between the Trump administration, the Biden-Harris administration, and ultimately what we hope, I hope, will be the Harris-Walz administration. And one of those areas is healthcare. If you remember, you go back to the whole the ACA, the dreaded Obamacare. We had the Trump years of, well, we want to kill it. We want to repeal, replace. Didn't know what they wanted to replace it with. Never got to see that, but most certainly kill it. And now I look at this report by our friends over at Capital in Maine, who have pointed out that during the and I guess not surprising, during the Trump years, the number of folks without health insurance rose. And under the Biden administration, the number of people without health insurance fell. Seems like pretty simple, but here to share some thoughts on what the numbers are, what this means, and maybe where we go from here. I've asked our good friend Jessica Goodhart to come talk with us. Jessica's a senior editor over at Capital in Maine. Jessica, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much, Rick, for having me.
So, you know, if you'd have just thrown this out and asked me the question, what do you think of this? I would have said the number of people uninsured under Trump would have gone up. The number of people uninsured under Biden would have gone down, just because I get their policies. But you guys have actually drilled down and done some of the numbers. What'd you find?
So, you know, very simply, sort of the top line finding is that the number of, in the first 3 years of the Trump administration, the number of uninsured grew by 3.3 million. And under Biden, the number of uninsured shrank by, it grew by 2.2 million under Trump. And it shrank by 3.3 million under Biden. It's election season, and we wanted to, you know, health insurance affordability, healthcare affordability, it's a big issue for people. And we wanted to take a look at the data and see what the data told us about the track records of the Trump administration and the Biden-Harris administration. So you referred to it in your opening remarks that when Trump campaigned, he campaigned on repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act with something much better, although I don't think we really know what that was.
Something great, something amazing, the best ever, something terrific, tremendous, incredible, the best ever, we were told.
So, you know, you may remember too that the Republican Congress attempted to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and John McCain comes in at the last minute and casts that tie-breaking vote that preserves Obamacare. And so, you know, in office, Trump then set out to weaken the Affordable Care Act. He cut the enrollment period by half, canceled outreach programs, removed the penalty for not having insurance, and slashed the Affordable Care Act's advertising budget by 90%. And so, like I said, during the first 3 years of his administration, the number of uninsured grows by over 2 million. It grows in 39 states, and the number of uninsured people also grows in the key battlegrounds, including Pennsylvania. And so, you know, this followed historic gains in the numbers of people who received health insurance under Obamacare, right, which was passed, you know, during Obama's first term. So, so that's the Trump record in a nutshell. So then we took a look at Biden, the Biden administration. Biden campaigned on a promise to strengthen the Affordable Care Act. And when he was, you know, when he is still in office, but what he did was he signed executive orders to reverse many of Trump's policies, and you know, gave people more time to sign up for insurance, and fixed loopholes into various things. And then, you know, as I said, at the end of his administration, the number of uninsured decreased by over 3 million. And this was a pattern we saw across the country in I think something like 40 states. And so that's a stark contrast, but we also, Jeremy Lindenfeld, who's the reporter who wrote this story, kind of went a little deeper as to sort of the reasons for that that contrast, because it's not just, it's partly about, you know, sort of Biden versus Trump's stance on the Affordable Care Act, but there's also what also comes into play is that there were protections that were enhanced during the pandemic, during the healthcare emergency. They happened under Biden, and some of them happened, you know, while Trump was in office as well. And some of those protections are currently in the process of unwinding, like, you know, one that, you know, stopped the government from kicking people off of Medicaid when they were no longer eligible. So we expect to see in data that's going to be released next week that the number of uninsured is likely to increase.
Because we're kicking people off of them because of some of the things that happened because of the pandemic, right?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a public health emergency. So, you know, to some extent, people got together and said, you know, the people in Congress actually worked together to, you know, prevent people from getting during a public health emergency.
So I look at this and I go, well, if we could do it during a health emergency, why can't we do it, you know, just in normal times? Because I think in the wealthiest country on the planet, at its wealthiest moment in human history, ensuring that people have some health security should be kind of the baseline of what our government is capable of doing. And maybe we should all have that and demand that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a really good point. I think there's, you know, there's the question you raised of sort of the choice between the two candidates, but there's also the choice we make as a country in terms of what kind of safety net we want to have. And we put certain things in place, like remember the child care tax credit, during the pandemic, which was not, you know, which we didn't continue to include. And so I think there's, you know, there were protections for renters that were put in place. So there were a bunch of things that we kind of kind of quickly in a sort of makeshift way kind of fashioned right. during the public health emergency, which are unwinding. And so, you know, well, there's going to be new data out next week. And so I encourage folks to keep following us on Capital Maine because we'll be doing an update. And then the other thing I want to say is that I think what's, you know, sometimes it's hard for people to kind of make connections between what happens policies and people's lives. And we really wanted to, you know, oftentimes people, you hear about the national uninsured rate, what does that mean? And so we wanted to translate it in terms of like, well, this is the number of people, this is the increase in the uninsured people in your state or the decrease in your state. So we have kind of an interactive map on our site so people can check out kind of how things look.
From, yeah, and look, you know, in swing states there. Especially, because as you pointed out, you know, the numbers are not great for Trump because during his tenure in those swing states, the number of uninsured went up because of his policies, and because of Biden's policies, the number of uninsured went down. So it seems to me that the hope would be people would go, I kind of like having insurance. I like having some health security, knowing that if I fall and break my leg, I'm not going to go bankrupt from medical bills. Or if my child falls off their bike and breaks their arm, and I'm not going to go broke. This seems like one of those issues that a good number of people might vote on.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, you know, there's surveys that show that, you know, something like 56 or 57% of people think healthcare affordability is an incredible, I mean, and a very important issue. I think just everyone knows in their own household is healthcare is very expensive, and it's also very, it's critical because people don't get care, they don't get preventative care, they will be sicker. If they don't get preventative care, they will be in the emergency rooms, and that's very expensive for you know, not really good for anyone. So it's such an important issue. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think some people may cast their vote on that.
As I framed this from the start, though, this idea of which side are you on? Because mm-hmm. We do remember the Trump years. We do remember the whole we want to repeal and get rid of the Affordable Care Act because, you know, the dreaded Obamacare had to go. We never learned what the replacement was going to be. I personally don't believe there ever was one outside of pay or die, but we'll never know. Or maybe we will. Maybe once if Trump is reelected and he goes back, maybe there's a great plan coming. I'm doubting. But, you know, the fact that, you know, Biden takes office and wants to strengthen, you know, what was a key piece of legislation during his tenure as vice president, to me, you know, sends the right message. So I guess the question that I keep coming back to is, you know, which side of this divide do we find ourselves? Do we want to ensure that our friends, our neighbors, our family, ourselves have health security in all times, jobs or no jobs? Or do we want to, you know, I guess, look at where we came from?
Yeah, and I think that with the, you know, the unwinding of some of those pandemic era protections, it really does raise the stakes for the election. You know, there's been, under Biden, the number of uninsured was reached historic lows. And, you know, I think the question you raised earlier is like, what, you know, what kind of, you know, many industrialized, kind of most industrialized countries have some kind of universal health insurance. What, you know, what do we want from our leaders in terms of policies that provide that protection?
Yeah, and for me, the other part of this, and I don't want to get off on a whole rant on national healthcare, yeah. But, you know, the idea of having a safety net like health security, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit of this country could explode if you were to let people go and follow their passions instead of being stuck in jobs just because, hey, this is where we get our health insurance. And then I don't know about you, but in this day and age, you know, we can't do anything without health insurance. So for me, just that spark that could happen is, you know, one of the reasons I think we do need to have a national kind of safety net to ensure that people, whether it's a giant private sector buying pool, whether it's Medicare for all, whether it's who knows what yet, that idea of that net under us is something that's very appealing to me.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that right now it's, you know, the what's coming out of the Trump campaign are some promises in his Agenda 47, which is his campaign platform, to, you know, very general promises to improve healthcare affordability. You know, he's also, Trump has also praised Project 2025, which calls for lifetime caps on Medicaid. And, you know, he's, and as recently as last year, he also proposed repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act with, again, something much better. So that's, you know, that's all we know a little bit, but, you know, we, what I think is really interesting to look at is when there is an actual record of actions. And here there is a record and there's data to show what that impact was, which was millions more uninsured people in the first 3 years of the Trump administration.
Yeah. Now, look, there are going to be some voters out there who go, "Why I hate the dreaded Obamacare. You know, these are just deadbeats getting free insurance," which it's not. But that's a frame that I get from some of my red hat friends. So the idea of, you know, an Affordable Care Act getting more people insured for some, and this is a weird kind of dynamic that I really can't explain. But the fact that more people are now getting insurance makes some people angry.
Yeah, I mean, remember, the Affordable Care Act had a lot of different elements to it. It was also allowed, it guaranteed that people with pre-existing conditions would get health coverage. They could not be excluded because of that. It allowed, you know, it created the, you know, healthcare.gov, which is this marketplace that, you know, allows people to purchase health insurance, sometimes subsidized depending on their income level. And then it included Medicaid, which is for low income people. Lots of people who work at places like Walmart, you know, are on Medicaid. And so it's not, you know, it's for working people as well as for people who, for whatever reason, are find themselves unable to work because, you know, that's, you know, it's all of that.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because the numbers don't lie. You know, in that world of, you know, which side are we on, you know, where do you see, you know, obviously you said there's going to be some changes coming soon. You know, for you, what's the takeaway from this report? You know, if you're depending on which side you're on this, what's the key takeaway that you want people to get from this?
I think there's a really clear record of what happens when you weaken our existing healthcare, you know, law that under the Trump administration. We saw a growth in the uninsured. We saw 2 million more people who are uninsured, and we saw that happen across the country. And then, you know, under Biden, we saw the rate of uninsured reach historic lows. That shows, I think you said, what we're capable of doing, you know, when we build out our health insurance system. And not that it's necessarily enough or good enough, you know, nobody, you know, I'm sure there are always improvements. And I also think the other takeaway, I think, you know, and this is going to be more clear in the next story that we report, is that, you know, some of this stuff is, some of these gains are potentially at risk, and that there's, you know, two candidates, one Trump, and you can look at his record, and one Harris, you know, part of the Biden-Harris administration. And I think that, you know, ultimately people, you know, those candidates, you know, however people come down, if health insurance is an important issue, then I think it's, you know, this is a good moment, right, yeah, for voters to let them know, yep, and share whatever your concerns are, to share them, let them be aware of that.
No, I mean, the records are clear. I mean, this, again, I've had for years people say, oh, both parties are the same, they're all the same. Nope. Very, very different, very stark differences between the two. And I would argue, as the number of uninsured go up, the cost to those of us who are insured also go up, because we have to cover uncompensated care. So for me, getting everyone in, kind of an important bit. But Jessica, yeah, I appreciate the thoughts. I appreciate the work that you guys do. Capital & Main, a great source. We'll get links out to the story. But Jessica Goodhart, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Rick.
Want to hear your thoughts. Is this something is this a voting issue? Is this an important voting issue to you? And are you one of the folks who got health insurance and are covered because of these policies. I want to hear it. Email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1949. That was the day known in New York as the Peekskill Riots. Internationally renowned African-American singer Paul Robeson was scheduled to give an open-air concert. He was known for his deep, moving voice, singing iconic songs like Shenandoah and the Ballad of Joe Hill. Robeson was active in the causes of civil and labor rights. In the Cold War hysteria after World War II, Robeson had been labeled a dangerous communist. The New York concert was originally planned to benefit the Civil Rights Congress. The group had been defending the Trenton Six, a group of six young black men sentenced to die in New Jersey for allegedly killing a white shopkeeper. The case was rife with legal abuses, but protests over the concert led to its cancellation. It was rescheduled, and the tickets were distributed to trade unionists in New York City. On the day of the concert, 2,500 union members made a human wall around the field to protect against protesters. Protesters gathered, hurling anti-black and anti-Jewish racial epithets. Pete Seeger opened the concert, followed by Robeson. The real trouble came when the concert ended and people tried to leave. The protesters threw rocks at passing cars, while policemen stood by and watched. 145 people were injured. Other concerts were canceled. Paul Robeson would continue to be harassed by the FBI. He was denied a passport due to his stance against anti-black discrimination in the United States and against colonialism in Africa.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Again, back to the frame. You know, which side are you on? This is this healthcare thing. Again, and thank you to Jessica Goodhart and the folks over at Capital in Maine for pointing this out. Like I said at the beginning of that interview, though, had you asked me the simple question, you know, what do you think? What do you think happened during the Trump years to the uninsured? And what do you think happened to the uninsured during the Biden years? I would have simply said, look, Republicans have told us they're against insuring people through public means. They don't want to have a public health care system. They don't want to have government do anything. So would I be surprised if I learned that millions of people lost their health insurance or went uninsured during the Trump years? No, it's who they are. It's what they do. It's what they tell us all the time. They were against the Affordable Care Act from the second step, because understand, the Affordable Care Act was the conservative health care plan during the 90s. It was what the Heritage Foundation suggested as an opposition to Hillary Care of the 90s, if you remember. So they were for it before they were against it, but they're against it because, well, you know, personal responsibility. Again, they were for it, now against it. This is one of those things where you go, they've told us who they are. So am I shocked? No, I'm not. Now, the ACA was Obama's key piece of legislation. It was one of the defining things of his presidency. Joe Biden was part of that. Said it was a big deal, if you remember. And I agree. So would I be surprised that he would strengthen it? No, not a bit. Common sense. These folks, they went and they looked at the numbers. Now, in those swing states, there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in states where they were divided by, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50,000 votes. The hope is they vote their job, they vote their livelihood, they vote their health security, and go, well, I got health insurance under this guy. This guy didn't want me to have it. Seems like a place to go. Now, I do remember the Trump years and the whole repeal and replace argument. And I was like, okay, if you want to repeal it. I wasn't 100% sold on the ACA. I said from the beginning, it's a good first step, but we would need a lot to improve it. And had we spent, understand, had we spent the last 14 years making the adjustments, making, tweaking it to make it better, it would be fantastic today. It would be things people would be, well, they'd be pursuing. I don't remember the Trump plan. I used to joke it was just a blank sheet of paper because what he described in an interview that I remember sounded an awful lot like car insurance, not health insurance. And it was going to be really cheap. It was going to be portable. It was going to be all these wonderful things. But no real details. So I only could surmise that, you know, pay or die. If you don't have the money to pay for the health care services, well, you know, like when you get a dent in your fender, if you don't have the insurance to fix it, you got a dent in your fender. This is the world that they want. And they've been very clear about it. You look at their Project 2025, it really is about repealing the 20th century and moving us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s. So the question then, you know, coming out of this Labor Day, which side are we on? I'm someone who believes that we should have a safety net for people who want to strike out on their own, who want to put up a shingle and try to start a small business so that, well, we have entrepreneurial growth, what this country is known for, without the risk of little Johnny and Susie or you know, mom and dad going without health insurance. That seems to me to be rational. Now, I was open to a lot of ideas. You know, someone had said, well, I don't want the government doing it. Okay. Well, let's have a cradle-to-grave mandate through private interests that you will get care from cradle to grave, non-cancelable, non-destroyable, but it will be mandated that you have the ability to insure yourself. And thus take responsibility. This is the other part that conservatives used to understand, real conservatives. Not the ones who play the, you know, play the role now, but real conservatives used to believe in personal responsibility. They used to believe in taking care of themselves. And that meant insurance. And if you remember, you know, Donald Trump was the guy who took away that, you know, that personal responsibility part. The mandate that everyone has to either get coverage or pay something. Because we know if you don't have coverage, you're going to cost all the rest of us. Because this is a society we're not. I know there are some conservatives who want us to be a society who lets people die on the sidewalk. But as a society, we're not going to let people just die on the sidewalk. I know the bean counters and some corporate interests, they'd be okay with it. But the rest of us, the people who have a conscience, the people who believe in and helping their neighbors, we're not going to let people die on the streets. And what generally happens there is, well, they get care and not comprehensive care, just enough to make sure you're not going to die at this moment, which is generally the most expensive delivery of care. And then we absorb it. Sane, rational people would go, there's a problem. As a country, we have a problem. As a country, we can come up with a solution. What I believe government is here to do those things collectively that we cannot do individually. We can ensure a population. Other countries have done it, and we could do it better because we're Americans. We should be able to do everything better. Isn't that what we're told? So it just seems to me that this is another one of those issues of voting-wise, which side are you on? And if the numbers are right, me, I'm on the Harris-Walls side. Because I've seen what Trump has done. And I'm reading in Project 2025 what they want to do. And I'll tell you, it's not a place where we want to be. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, get the podcast or freespeech.org for the videos. Thanks so much for being here. As always, we'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You're listening to The Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.